You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by ProncPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. This is the Monday edition, and I'm going to highlight two stories, one being the president today had a meeting and where he outlined some of the highlights of his infrastructure plan. The gist of it is that what President Trump wants is to spend $200 billion over a 10-year period, so an average of about $20 billion a year, and the rest of the money, because he wants to have a total of anywhere from $1.5 trillion, in other words, $1,500 billion to $1,800 billion in infrastructure over that 10-year period, would be put up by the states, localities that have approved, permitted projects to get going on. In other words, the way I look at it, this is sort of seed money to get the ball rolling, and it enables local communities, whether it's a town, a city, county, state, to get some money from the federal government, but most of the money has to come locally. So it's to provide some incentives, some positive incentives for local governments to invest in what they think is important. He also expressed the idea that he's more interested not so much in new projects, but, for example, roads, making sure that they're well maintained and not destroying a perfectly good highway or road while you're building another one, and we'll get into that. In addition, I'll also be covering, and they're really related, the president's budget, fiscal year 2019 budget, and in some ways, this is very much dead on arrival or moot for the simple reason last week, and that's why I spent a lot of time on it in the last couple of shows. Democrats and Republicans got together, the big government parties, and agreed to a two-year budget, and that's for fiscal year 2018 and 2019. That's why I say it's moot. And what I'm hearing from the Republicans to justify what they did was, well, we needed to boost military spending and get out from under those budgetary constraints. And yes, the Defense Department got out from under, and it was well received by the military. But the price for doing that were significant increases in domestic, primarily welfare and to a certain extent entitlement spending, which makes the point I'm trying to emphasize. I've seen presidential budgets, and I've spent time on presidential budgets, whether it's Bush's or Obama's or now Trump's. But who really makes the decisions here? It's not the president. This is more or less a guideline at best, a framework, even though they call it a budget, because it's up to the House and the Senate, and the House originates spending bills as and money bills, and that involves spending and taxes. And then the Senate, they both have to have common language. So both houses have to first pass a budget, have authorizations, but the key is the appropriations and done by department, and they're not following their own procedures. This is a what we saw last week was done very much behind closed doors. not public hearings, and it was cutting a deal. And no one, it appears, is looking at the big picture and where this leads. It's not that they don't know where it leads, but it's like, don't confuse us. I call it invincible ignorance. Don't confuse me with the facts. I've already made up my mind. And the big spenders in the Republican Party and the Democratic Party were responsible for this. Not a lot of Republicans did not vote for it. If I were there, I wouldn't vote for it. And I know what they're saying. You got to do it because we have to help our military. Excuse me, I understand that. But you're not looking at the fundamental problem. And that fundamental problem is the government at all levels, but at the federal level is overspending. It's out of control. And until you address that, don't talk to me about the military. In other words, until you make the tough decisions, and they have not made any tough decisions other than people aren't following this, and that's why they get away with it. We'll get away with this. I don't think they will get away with it because I think what you're going to see, and I hope to see, we'll see, is that you'll see a second Tea Party movement. But this time, they've learned their lessons. And they've learned that it doesn't matter whether it's the Democratic Party, control of the House, the Senate, or the presidency, or the Republican Party. The pattern is, under Bush, under Obama, and now under Trump, all three of them have let government spending on the federal level balloon. Now, a word I don't like is unsustainable, but it does apply here. People now believe that deficits don't matter. No one's paying attention to that. Deficits together, and deficits is where the government spends more money in total than total tax collections or tax revenue. Deficits together with the national debt. The way to think of it, a deficit is for each period of time a fiscal year. But where you in a situation where you're spending more money than total tax collections, what does that mean? You have to borrow money. And that's the reason the national debt keeps going up, up and up. And that's why they have to raise the debt ceiling, which they have to do. But that's only a fraction of the story. The big problem is, and these are two big problems, we're talking deficits of hundreds of billions of dollars. And in 18 and 19, it looks like it will get back to near $1 trillion, $1,000 billion. Remember the first year Obama, $1,400 billion. Second year, $1,300 billion. Third year, $1,300 billion. Fourth year, slightly under $1,300 billion. Well, we're going right back there. You're supposed to learn from your mistakes. You're supposed to learn, ideally, from other people's mistakes. What has been the problem with the U.S. economy overall? As government has gotten bigger, as the deficits have gotten bigger, as the national debt has gotten bigger, what's happened? The economic growth of the United States is stagnating. It's not negative, but it's not 3.5%. It's not 4 or 5 or 6%. It's right around 2%. And as long as government spending remains out of control, you're running massive deficits. And remember, the economy is growing. It's not in a recession, folks. It's not doing as well as it should. That's why I was for fundamental tax reform, a tax cut in the form of a broad-based consumption tax. Did Trump have fundamental tax reform? No. But he did have a tax cut. What he did not have, and this is the key point, he did not have a balanced budget, nor did he try to, over a 3 or 4 year period, get to a balanced budget. Now, you can blame the president, but really the people that you should blame are the House and the Senate. They're the ones with the votes. And we have big spending Democrats and Republicans. I blame both parties for this. As far as I'm concerned, they're not doing their jobs. They're not responsible financially or fiscally, and they're not doing their jobs. They're very good at spending your money and my money, but not very well. And it's totally out of control. And what happened last week, and the president signed the bill. Remember, presidents can veto the bill. You see, I said to myself, when was the last president, I mean, looking at history, that really would have said no and vetoed this bill? Calvin Coolidge. You have to go back to the late 1920s, mid to late 1920. He believed in fiscal responsibility. He was very, very good at saying no, 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 and vetoing bills. If you ask me what President Trump should have done is veto the bill. He didn't do that, did he? Just for your new listeners, I'm not a Democrat and I'm not a Republican. Those are big government parties. And if you keep voting like this at some future date, in the not too distant future. If you want my best guess, 2028. If you want a range somewhere between 2030 plus or minus 5-6 years, this whole thing gets blown up. No, not by a bomb, although I call it the debt bomb, because people that invest their money, what do they look at? Is this a, for example, if it's a stock, is this a business that's well run, has a product that's in great demand? What do the revenues look like? What do the costs look like? What's the debt structure? How good is the management? Do they know what they're doing? I look at this government, the president, as well as the House and the Senate, as far as I'm concerned, they don't know what they're doing. It's staring them in the face. Now, some actually do know the problem. Not many, but some do know the problem. I'm sure President Trump's budget director knows the problem. He has a reputation for being a so-called deficit hawk. I'm a deficit eagle. I don't like it, whether it's a Democratic or Republican deficit. But that's a symptom. It's spending that's out of control. And as you pile more and more debt on, there's a cost of debt. You got to pay not only the principal back, but you also have to pay the interest. And as you get bigger and bigger, more of your budget goes to what? Paying interest. I was just looking at some numbers to get a feel. Today, the carrying cost, the interest that in terms of the budget is somewhere between 6 and 7%. But what happens as the economy does grow? You see, I think we have a period here of probably 3 to 4 years of economic growth rate that will get us back to the trend line. The trend line growth of the U.S. economy is between 3 and 3.5%. Think of it as the average, if you will. Now, it depends what year you start and end or which decade you start and end. There have been periods of much higher growth, much lower growth. But overall, history, between 3 and 3.5%. I think, given what they've done so far, we'll get there and we'll get more revenues, and that's beginning to happen already. But will this last? Because as you pile on more and more debt, the interest that you got to pay goes up, up, and up. There's no free lunch here. If you can't pay your bills, and that is in essence the problem with the federal government, they can't pay all their bills. They have to borrow money. It's not optional, folks. They have to borrow money. So you can get in the weeds on the presidential budget. I'm not. He makes a lot of cuts, and I'm sure the Democrats are going to get on and on about it. But this is theater. Where the rubber hits the road, where reality is what the House and the Senate approve. And that was the deal last week. Now, for 2 years, maybe three, we're going to have a growing economy either near or maybe even slightly above that market trend line. And as that happens, what would you expect to happen? The unemployment rate will go down and the labor participation rate will go up. That's good news, and that's what you want to see. I want to see the labor participation rate go back up to 7%, and ideally above 67%. The long-range trend in the labor participation rate, I mean for the total labor force, prior to the so-called Great Recession, it was between 66 and 67%, but we had months that it was above 67%, and that trend should continue. Now it's at least four percentage points below that. And the reason why unemployment rates were going down in the Obama administration, there was no secret. People were leaving the labor force. It got up to 95, 96 million people not in the labor force. It wasn't that more people were employed. It was that more people had dropped out. They weren't looking for jobs. And what you should see is the economy picks up its pace and starts to grow better, more people that currently are not in the labor force will come back and be working full time and hopefully at good paying jobs. That's what you want to see. That's why I favor the tax cuts. But what's not being addressed that ultimately will end this good news is the fact that the deficits and the unfunded liabilities, obligations for what? Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and government pensions, including military. Unfunded means they don't have the money. And if you don't have the money, how are you going to pay those? You're going to borrow. See the problem? And it's getting bigger and bigger. Eventually, what happens is the people that will buy Treasury securities, that's the one asset category. It's the biggest asset category in the world. A lot of people, at least in the past, thought it was the safest, most secure investment. So in times of let's say, high uncertainty, capital will flee to Treasury securities. At least in the past, they did that. But now it's becoming abundantly clear, even to those that don't invest in Treasuries, that the United States government can't continue to do this. And if they want to borrow money, you're going to have to pay more. You're going to have to pay what's called a risk premium. What that means is, as the economy grows, you'll see interest rates go up. The Fed will probably increase it at least four times this year. I predict roughly a percent increase of where it's at now. And if we have this economic growth rate, they will continue to do that. They're behind the curve, by the way. They should have been doing this several years ago. It's not today. The federal funds target rate is determined by the Federal Reserve. And that's the rate that banks charge each another. If they are shorter reserves, they have to go in the overnight market. They have to borrow money for a day. And what's charged is the federal funds rate. Well, that's very much manipulated, controlled by the Federal Reserve in its open market operations. This is not an investment course. What I'm saying is, and Rand Paul said this, if we get back to a normal Fed funds rate, we're probably in the 3-5% range. But every other interest rate, there's a term structure of interest rates. It's sort of keyed off of that. So depending on what you're borrowing the money for, mortgages for homes, students for student loans, car loans, corporations, however, the interest rate that you're going to have to pay as the Fed funds rate goes up, you're going to have to be paying a lot more interest. And so is the federal government. If we get into an inflationary situation, which I think we could, I think we might very well see a replay of what happened in the 1970s. Where in the late 70s and early first couple of years of 1980, we had double-digit rates, double-digit. So if we get inflation roaring back, you better believe the Fed will tighten it and have much higher interest rates, and that will affect all interest rates. And ultimately, what does this do? It ends a boom. I'm predicting we'll have first good economic growth rates. We'll get into a boom, and invariably what happens, we have a bubble. We have a lot of speculation. It could be in the stock market. It could be in real estate. Who knows? It could be in commodities. Eventually, though, we're going to have another recession, and this one I think will be worse than the last one. So what's the federal government going to do? Let's say optimistically this went not only 3-4 years, it went 6 years. We're getting closer that at time, and what's one of the big drivers here? Some would say is the driver, is the fact that the baby boom generation is retiring. It's simply retiring, which means the government has to pay out Social Security payments, and to the extent these people get sick, Medicare payments. And when the entire baby boom generation is retired around 2030, between 2030 and 2035, there'll be some that still work and don't collect Social Security, although they're eligible for Medicare. You determine when you want to start collecting Social Security benefits. Some do it early when they're 62. Some wait because they get a bigger benefit, but you got to be alive. If you die suddenly, tough luck for you. So most people, when they reach 66 or 67, become eligible, that's usually when they take it. Many of them are retired. Many of them are still working because they got hit hard in the last recession. But what that means is the entitlements are part of mandatory spending. Those will dramatically increase. And so will interest increase. And if we don't reform welfare, so will welfare increase. Eventually, the top three categories, two, of the mandatory spending, together with interest, will be 80-85% of all spending. We're not there yet. Right now, it's around 70%. Just add those three together. Look at what entitlements, total category spending is, as well as what I'm calling welfare. Today, that's around 63-64%. Add 6-7% for interest, you're at 70%. But when that baby boom generation, and it's gradually retiring, but by 2030, most of them are retired and collecting, that 70% will be more than 80%, heading towards 90%. That's why I keep saying you got to close down permanently federal departments. What is the first thing a business does when it's in a recession? Oh, it lays off a lot of people. They want to survive. They want to continue the business. They have to obviously service their current clients or customers, but they really go over that budget, and it means that a lot of people are on the street. They keep their absolutely essential people, and a lot of functions are that used to be in-house go out of house. What amazes me is we never go through this exercise really with the federal government. If we were serious, we'd be cutting the size of the federal government by at least 50%. No one's talking about doing that. I am, but who am I? Votes count. How many votes do I have in the Senate and the House? Zero. They don't represent me. I didn't vote for these clowns. It doesn't end well. There is a day of reckoning. It doesn't end well. The debt bond blows up, and then you're forced to make the hard decisions that they should be doing right now. Now, I'm looking at the clock, and I really haven't discussed much the infrastructure, and it's being criticized. Now, in the past shows, I'm not a fan of public-private partnerships at all because it becomes who you know, it becomes very political. It leads to crony capitalism. What I am in favor and have been emphasizing, it's really not the role of the federal government to really be the leader in terms of infrastructure. That's very much a local decision, whether it's a city or town, a county, a state. And it's up to the people that live there to decide what type of infrastructure investments that they're willing to spend money on. That includes roads and bridges, but it also includes airports, public schools, colleges, and it's up to the people, usually in bond issues, whether or not to prove it. It looks like a very big number, but $200 billion, you divide by 10 years, that means on average $20 billion a year. Now, usually what they do, up front, they'll have more. But to spread it, it looks like a big number, so they use 10 years. It's this baseline budgeting nonsense. But it's really up to the local communities. If they want that money, seed money, they're going to have to, first of all, get the people to approve spending their money and making sure that the permits are in. Now, Donald Trump emphasized this. It's no good. And if I were in the federal government, I wouldn't give anybody a penny until these projects are ready to go. In other words, they have all the permits. Now, I got the signal I got to wrap it up. This is a little bit earlier than expected, so I do apologize. But I do have, for new listeners, the way you listen to this show is to go to the prompopops.wordpress.com site. It's my companion blog for the show. And what I suggest you do, I couldn't play the whole thing. It's about 20 minutes. You'll get a flavor of Trump interacting with various government officials. There's going to be competition if they're only going to spend $20 million. And let me put it in context. There is anywhere from $3,000 billion to $5,000 billion of capital investments in infrastructure that could be done. What they lack is funding, and it's fundamentally the local people that have to decide what roads they want, what highways they want, what overpasses, what bridges. As far as I'm concerned, it's not the role of the federal government to do this. Yes, I know about the interstate highways, and yes, there needs to be maintenance, and there is, and money spent on it, but it's primarily a local decision, and we're paying taxes on it. Gasoline taxes. It needs to be addressed, but it's not at the federal level. Trump can provide leadership and provide seed money, but it's fundamentally a local problem, and that's where I strongly recommend that it be addressed, not at the federal level. I'm not for federal infrastructure projects with very few exceptions. And the reason why, believe it or not, we have an interstate highway was an Army officer, Eisenhower, was shocked when he saw the state of highways. And this was before World War II. So for national security reasons, you have to get the merchandise, tanks, ammunition, whatever, if you're going to fight a war. So you need a rather good highways that the trucks can use. But unless you have a strong national defense reason for doing the infrastructure, it's a local responsibility. It's a state responsibility. I'm a very big advocate of a federal system. And I think the presidential budget, why it might be interested reading, it's already moot and dead because they've already had a two-year budget deal for fiscal year 2018 and 2019. And they blew the budget. they busted the budget. And that's going to ultimately hurt you and me. So this is going to be a relatively short show, but don't get nervous now. But you better start to get real nervous. Nothing's going to change until we have a new political party that really believes in limited government. And neither the Democratic Party or the Republican Party do believe in limited government. Nor are they really addressing the fundamental problem facing American today, is that's out of control spending, federal government spending. And it's not just the federal problem. It's also very much a state, county, and city. The government and the politicians are spending the American people into the poorhouse. That's what's going on. And you have no one to blame but yourself. So unless you're willing to start a new political party, don't come to me. The people to blame are you because you keep voting Democrat and Republican. With that, my favorite song, America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.